This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Kai Gunwitz, Senior VP at NTT Security.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for inviting me and having me here again.
It's been a while since we spoke. You've had a really busy year. Do you want to give us a quick update on what's been happening?
Since we met last time, we changed a lot in the European business here for us. We have really changed the way how we deliver projects by building a European-wide shared delivery model on the consulting side, which is pretty successful. And we have built up new practices around identity management on that side. We also really increased and accelerated the business we do with our go-to-market opcos. So that means with the entity data, dimension data, and entity comm, which resonates very well with our clients' requirements to consolidate contractual partners as well. We have nearly 80-90% in all countries through the indirect channels. That's a success for us. But more importantly, I see the swing that we really transformed how we do cybersecurity from a technology-driven approach to a more business-oriented cybersecurity with our clients, really providing meaningful security services to support the transformation the companies face. Let me make one example. In the automotive industry, we are transforming the entire business, how we drive, how we buy cars, how we design combustions, etc. All these things change, but it has to be done in a secure way because everyone wants to drive a safe car. And cybersecurity is an essential part of this transformation. No one wants to drive a car which hits the wall. We have invested in this area to work with suppliers, with manufacturers, etc. And in cybersecurity, we build a practice around that. Together with our friends in Japan, and also we started to work on special things like vehicle socks and other things. I see a lot of innovation and thought leadership coming up through our EMEA team here, especially on the consulting side. We work hand in hand with our friends from Entity Data and Dimension Data. And as well, we see more and more the standard managed security services in Europe converging with the bespoke services. Because sometimes it's not one fits all. You have to build solutions that are meaningful for the client. I'm pretty happy with what we saw on the business side last year. And as well, we have expanded our footprint. We have won first projects in Italy, where we have not been before. We have started to work in Eastern Europe, Romania, and other countries, opened up Middle East a little bit. We are really expanding also the footprint, and what I'm especially proud about is that we are doing more and more business in Benelux, where we have been underrepresented in the past. Overall, you see a happy man today.
So where does that take you for the next year? Because sometimes a really successful year can lead to a year of consolidation.
On the business side, we will continue to work on the thought leadership piece and innovation. That's something where we will continue to invest. We have already started to invest in more SOCs in Europe, partly driven also by political reasons. For example, we have the Brexit in the future, or we will have it not. We will see how it will look like, but it will have an impact on our business, how we deliver services. That will be not a consolidation. We will have more footprint on a SOC side. For example, we started a new SOC in Munich to work on the threat detection because we don't want to put a risk on our business with our clients. On the consolidation side, I think you refer to the Entity Inc. part.
I do.
This will be the next natural step for us. We have in Europe been very successful, as I said before, in collaborating already. With Entity Inc., we are doing the next logical step. And I really appreciate the initiative by Zavada-san here, because one entity is a very powerful message in the market. I cannot tell you right now how the picture will look like from an organizational perspective, but from the go-to-market and from the feedback I get from my clients, I get from the partners, they all are happy with that approach because the perception of entity is today a little bit fragmented. We have different brands, different focus areas. With the power of one entity, we will be seen much stronger in the market. And I see that resonates well with things we do at the moment in the governmental sector in Germany, for example, where we are better seen than ever before. I see this consolidation create a stronger entity brand in the future.
If we take one business case, you talked about connected cars there. We know we have a challenge with the quantity of data that's going to be generated by each vehicle. We know the number of vehicles we have in city areas that we now need to bring together. We know that that's going to be a prime attack surface for hackers. And more importantly, we know the complexity of that supply chain, particularly here in Europe, where manufacturers have to open to third parties. All of those create volume, communication, data storage, and security. How does that play to you? Because Entity Inc. seems to be ideally positioned for you to now offer a single solution rather than be offering bits of solutions.
The automotive industry is one of the strongest areas for Entity here in Europe already, right now. And the transformation will accelerate that. The largest clients for us, for example, in Germany, are in the automotive area. And you forgot one item, we have also data centers. because we are the largest data center provider here as well. We call it the home for the cloud because we have all the data centers in the Frankfurt area. The end-to-end messaging on that, from working with the manufacturers on the application design, on the cockpit design, etc., making sure that, for example, from a security perspective, that the plants have a secure OT environment as well on the production side and not being corrupted in the supply chain, that the materials are delivered by the suppliers are secured as well and from a compliance perspective, because you also have to do the right reporting on that. That's a good thing for us. But as well, the in-car security components you flagged before, we have the volume. I give you two numbers. For me, the most impressive thing, 100 million lines of code for a car. It's not a car, it's a program in the future. And then we have as well 25 gigabytes of security relevant data per hour per car. This volume we need to aggregate in a smart way, and then Entity Data has a machine intelligence systems to do that, to filter the data. On the other hand, we also have the storage and data center capability. Automotive is a fascinating industry for us because it transforms faster than nearly everything else, and we all notice that. But one thing, because everyone focuses on cars, I think to be sustainable in the future, we also have to consider what alternative transportation systems we have, especially in the cities. You have the car sharing, you need smart applications and portals for that. But also what we do with the traditional public transportation to improve that quality, because if we want to have a planet for our future generations, we need to think smart on that side as well.
How does this change how we now view vehicles and view security? If we look at 100 million lines of code, that's the same sort of number we would expect in an Airbus or a Boeing aircraft. But they have a much longer production cycle from the initial design of the aircraft through to its testing, through to its regulatory requirements, and then through to securing it. In addition, access is extremely limited to those systems. When we think about these cars being out there, car manufacturers have the liability of the physical bits of the car. Do the wheels fall off? Does the engine explode? Does the car catch fire? But now they're going to have to deal with those challenges for security and software. And we know from the software industry that this is a problem we're still trying to solve 40 years on. What does this mean, do you think, for that industry?
It changed the industry at the moment. And to pick up the example of the 100 million lines of code, it's more than in an Airbus. That's, for me, fascinating. I talked to some of the guys and said, this is unbelievable. The automotive industry is now already an application industry. You see the way how design thinking is changing, and security is more and more. And that's something I see day to day in our job. The automotive industry thinks security by design in that area. And the transaction cycles and how long a car model is before it will be replaced with a new one is more dynamic than in most of the other industries in that area. They need a consistent update process for that, and over-the-air update as a buzzword in that area. But it has to be secure communication. We see massive challenges on that, but I see definitely that the industry responds to that to convert the culture and the way how design and develop products to a more IT-driven development. Of course, we still need aerodynamics and other things, but you see with the new combustion, a lot of things will change anyway. It's so disruptive at the moment, and security is at the heart of their design thinking. That's a positive momentum, because I'm a car driver as well. I really appreciate that approach. We can support, but at the end, it also has to change on the engineering side that they think in a different way, because the car is already today a computer, but it will be an application in the future.
How does that change liability and insurance? If we look at cyber insurance, we've talked about it for 2, 3, 4 years. We're starting to get some understanding of the realities of that. The early cyber insurance was sold without the insurance companies going into organizations at all. It was just a bolt-on to their existing policies. We're now seeing a change in that, where we're starting to see the insurance companies be more serious about it because they're beginning to realize the risks. But what should we start to see in terms of that relationship? If I buy a house insurance, then there's enough data out there for an insurance company to make a generic assessment on me. But for cyber insurance, it's my policies, my processes, my audits, how I look after data, what my risk factor is from third parties. When you're talking with cyber insurance companies and you're looking at this market, what are you seeing?
Of course, there's also a buzz and hype about that, because everyone asks now for a cyber insurance. And a lot of clients ask, okay, if I have this insurance, if I have an incident, cover it. I have to say, no, wake up on that side, because it's not the case. An insurance company tries to protect themselves as well, and therefore they need to have some proof points that you did your homework, as you said, that you're ready for a cyber insurance. They will definitely exclude certain items. The companies have to prepare to be ready and qualify for a cyber insurance on one hand side. And the insurance companies, on the other hand, they have not the historical background to understand what are the real risk exposures and the companies faces. Sometimes, and we had had a discussion about that. They run maybe an audit which is not depth enough. So they've scratched the surface and they maybe underestimate risks. Or the insurance is so expensive that you cannot afford it because they overprotect themselves. So I think the industry here is not at the maturity level right now where it has to be for the challenges. As you've indicated, the complexity is so immense. It's hard for a company to really cover an end-to-end insurance on cyber because we have so many dependencies and communications over there. On the other hand, I see with cyber insurances and insurance business in general with cyber security and data collection returning to the car, new business models popping up, not only insuring against cyber breaches, but also using data to offer new insurance models in car data. What can you do with that? Use the driver's data to provide a better insurance if you're a careful driver. But on cyber, I think there's a lot of noise out there. I see a big gap on the enterprise side that they are not ready yet to deliver what insurance companies need. On the other hand, the insurance companies, they try to have a way out that they don't have to pay when something happens. And there are enough cases where the companies they are going in dispute afterwards because they think they have a coverage and the company said it's not covered. I think it's a market of the future, but the complexity will require a lot of learning factors in that industry in the future.
When we look at insurance, one of the long-standing models has been the use of brokers. They can address a different market, they can get a message out there, they can bring more people in. If I look at cybersecurity companies like yourselves, and I look at your SIEM product, and I look at an insurance company, and I look at a customer of yours, it seems that you have an awful lot of that information to be able to help inform the insurance company on how they would structure a policy, on how well behaved that client is, on the level of risk that client takes in the way it uses its technology. How do you get yourself in that position where effectively you become not quite the wedding broker between the insurance company and the client, but actually you become that trusted third party?
That's already reality for us because we have a lot of data. One of my colleagues today said, who has the data? Entity has the data. Because we know a lot of things that are going on, not only on the global network, but also what's going on the threat landscape. We know from our consulting teams very well how good maturity looks like. What is the role model of a company in a specific industry, how they should defend their core values. What we do, we support cyber insurance companies on assessing the risks at the beginning to help them to understand how exposed they would be with providing insurance for a specific client. But on the other hand, we also help the clients to be ready for that side because sometimes the client has no real monitoring, no early warning system about any potential breach. And the companies wanted to have that. It's, by the way, anyway necessary with GDPR right now that you understand if you're breached or not. But this combination of, I call it best practice and market benchmark data, is for the insurance very valuable because we help them to evaluate the risks. And they have better mathematical models than we have, but we can provide input to that. We have the best practices to support the clients to be ready. And that can be simple things like patching in some areas as well, because patching is one of the things the insurance companies ask for. What is your patch process? How does it look? Are you always up to date? How much Windows 95 you still have up and running or something like that? Because that all defines the risk profile at the end. That's something we do. We have already clients that we work on. And also some of the insurance companies use our incident response capabilities at the end. Because they say, okay, we will make this insurance and we will provide that, but we ask you to have a third-party incident response team ready if something happens to jump in to ring-fence the problem at the end. That's where we also help sometimes after they sold and agreed on insurance.
You mentioned the GDPR there. One of the big problems in the last 2 years has been supply chain attack. And with GDPR, that accelerates because we are now liable for what our data processors do with the data. So it's not just about our security, it's about theirs. When we think about cyber insurance and we think about securing all that, do you see a point where insurance companies are going to start saying, well, we will insure you, but we won't insure the actions of your trusted third parties? And does that open up an opportunity for you then to start looking at how you sell a wider set of products? You sell to a large company, but you give them the ability to then provide sub-licenses to some of their third-party suppliers.
Definitely, that's a good point. It has not happened yet. But I think the insurance companies, to protect themselves, they have to say sometimes, okay, we can only cover that because we understand that. I don't know what the company A is doing somewhere in another country or whatever. This will be excluded from our insurance. That's definitely the case. And I have not seen the company already passing information and say, okay, entity security, can you support our supplier on that side? But I'm pretty sure once in a while it will happen, but it has not been so relevant for us at the moment. But it's a very good thought, and honestly, you gave me a good idea on that side.
One of the things that Scott Daly said to me when I spoke to him at the SOC in Omaha just before Christmas was compliance does not equal security. We're in a world at the moment where regulators are rushing to create new laws. If there's a cyber incident, let's have a new law. If there's a cyber breach, is the law good enough? Do we need to make a better law? The problem is people are now starting to look at their security and say, I meet what HIPAA requires. Yeah. I meet what the GDPR checkbox requires.
Checkbox.
And they go down these checkboxes. How do we put some reality around that? Because if all they've got is checkboxes, that does not mean that they're safe.
I have two items on that to add in story. So one is, if you talk to a client sometimes and they said, oh, we want to be PCI compliant, or we want to become ISO 20001 certified. The first question I ask, do you want to have a certification, or do you want to make your company more secure? Because there's a short way in that direction. Or this is a long road. It requires a security program to be more secure. And I completely concur with your statement here, because quite often the company just want to have checkbox. I'm compliant. And when something happens, they can say, we are compliant. But a defined process will not make them secure. I think that's something we see not only with GDPR and the others, we see it with all compliance areas. We recently had a famous hack in Germany, you remember? Immediately, people had the reflex to ask for more regulations in that area. And regulations will not help that, because misbehavior is still misbehavior. You cannot have a rule against misbehavior or wrong behavior or mistakes. It will happen. Here, we need to change the thinking. What is the good thing about the regulation? It raises the awareness and attention, and then the management is responsible to pick it up to make it draw the right conclusions out of that. The regulation can help to foster a security culture, initiate a security culture. Then the management is responsible to draw the right conclusions and see, okay, we have the certification, but what will happen if I have an incident right now? How can I handle that? Is my incident response procedure really ready for that and will survive a life test or not? Do we have the right tools to recognize an attacker early enough to avoid any data leakage? Do we have in place a proper encryption or a solution to avoid if data leaks out that no one can use it? Still, a lot of companies don't have a proper data leakage prevention in place. Surprisingly, but that's a fact. We have a lot of companies, they think technology will fix it all. And security is not a technology challenge as well. Of course, technology is part of it, but it's also the combination of technology, awareness, procedures, and regulations. And if everything comes together, it works. For me, the key is a company ready to define a security program for themselves? Do they understand their risk exposure before they start working on something? And quite often I see they start from the wrong end. Instead of defining a strategy and program that fits to their business, they start with either a technology or, as you flagged, with a compliance thing. We have to change their approach to cybersecurity. All the discussions about regulations, and I'm not a big fan of regulations only if it's necessary. For example, I'm a big fan of standardization in IoT and have some regulations in that area to guarantee a certain quality. In some other areas, we are overdoing massively at the moment. The focus has to be defined in a meaningful strategy for the company instead of following regulations.
When we get to July, an NTT Inc. appears. You will be a company that's operating across some of the parts of the world where we're seeing massive changes in regulation. Australia with privacy and encryption. China, privacy. Singapore, privacy. India, privacy. California, privacy. The federal government of the United States now looking at privacy. Europe, the GDPR. We know we have at least 3 encryption bills coming in some of those areas as well. You will have an interesting view through the new company on all those areas and have to operate across them. How much of an opportunity does that give you with particularly your multinational clients in helping them move away from compliance checkboxes to actually integrating their solution to accommodate all the compliance requirements based on where they are operating?
We are already working with some international clients right now, and the Singapore regulation is pretty close to GDPR. We try to support them to follow the global regulations as far as possible. In the future, it will accelerate, but hopefully a lot of regulations will at least be close to the ones we have implemented. Also, in California, they like the GDPR approach. So I think we have done something great in Europe with the GDPR, because it's something everyone looks up to benchmark with GDPR, and they follow a lot of that. What we do a lot is GDPR-driven at the moment, of course, here in Europe, in my team. We can help other companies across the world better if it's closer to GDPR, of course. But also we have teams all across the world to combine that. I see NTT security in that case, because risk and compliance is a large business for us. And therefore, we are in a good spot to support clients on that journey as well. I've seen a lot of projects happening already around that, but I think with the new regulations, we will see some more because a lot of people struggle already to understand GDPR across the world. That's a growing business for us, I'm pretty sure, especially in APAC in the US in the future.
It's going to be an interesting and a very busy year for me from the sounds of it.
Oh, it will be a fantastic year for us. And honestly, you see me smile already because I really enjoy the journey we are going as a company, but also the transformation we see in our world, in our society and the market, because it's all moving. And even if you struggle something with some of the fragmentation on the national state politics, overall, I think we have a good opportunity in the future, not only in the business, but also if we do it right in the future development of our global society.
Kai, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.